Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Joshua Yunkin. Joining us today are Center for Science and Culture Senior Fellows, David Berlinski and Michael Denton. A longtime critic of neo-Darwinism, philosopher David Berlinski has authored over a dozen books, and this year published 1, 2, 3, Absolutely Elementary Mathematics. Michael Denton has been a medical geneticist for over 20 years, a researcher on the mammalian eye, and is the author of 2 books, Evolution, A Theory in Crisis, and more recently, Nature's Destiny. Both Dr. Berlinski and Dr. Denton are senior fellows with the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute. On today's podcast, Berlinski and Denton discuss the nature of numbers and the laws of form. For Berlinski, the end or the paradigm shift may come by way of some grand intellectual monument like Newton's Principia. For Denton, mechanistic cell biology will give way to some top-down view of life that permits and sees the many emergent properties of the cell.
I wanted to say a word about your book, 1, 2, 3, which I loved. I thought was
thank you.
It was a wonderful story of the history, the philosophy, the personalities behind mathematics. How would you characterize the relevance of what you write in your book to the discussion we're having now? I mean, you talk about mathematics as pointing to something transcendently beyond itself, or glory beyond.
Yeah.
How would you characterize, or is there a way to, the relevance of what you write in that book, the discussion we've been having up to now?
Well, from my point of view, and the point of view may not be completely articulate, they're all connected.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Right.
I like to think that I'm pursuing an odder corner of a connected space than, say, Doug Axe's work in central area of biology, or Mike Denton is concerned with cell biology. I'm puttering around in mathematics, which is also the expression of the human spirit, obviously it is. And I'm astonished again and again and again by what I think we should be astonished by in biology, too. The astonishment in biology comes about that there's such things as creatures. There's no reason looking at the physics that life should exist. It's totally unexpected development. But looking at human beings, there's no reason that mathematics exists, and that it's discoverable, and that it's ordered, and that it offers an enchanted garden through which we can pass.
Yeah.
Not easily. Oh, don't let anyone say it's easy. But if you work hard, you discover the paths. And that, to me, is a source of absolute astonishment. No one knows the origin of mathematics. No one has a clue. We can dismiss at once shallow ideas that mathematics is an invention of the human mind, obviously. It's not. If it were an invention of the human mind, mathematical laws would be false at a time when there were no human minds. But obviously they're true. 15 billion years ago, it was true that there was a natural number between 2 and 4, the number 3. There were no human minds. So an existence assertion says that something existed at a time when no human minds existed, which immediately raises the question, how come it's there, right in front of our eyes, right in front of our gaping eyes?
I mean, to me, that suggests a religious intuition. I mean, that's what came. I mean, you don't say that in the book.
No.
But to me, that's what, you know, I think many readers will come away with that all of these sciences point to something immeasurably great.
Yeah, outside I don't our say universe. It because in writing a book, that's no time to be making enemies, right?
No,
every reader.
No, but let's say, you know, there's a saying in the Talmud that you should teach your mouth to say I don't know. But let's play a game where it's where the only rule is you can't say I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is being pointed to by these great mysteries of science?
Let me give you the answer. It originated as a quip, but a quip with depth. Kronecker, Leopold Kronecker, I discuss him in the book, a mathematician, a German mathematician, a Jew converted to Protestantism. Very, very good mathematician, but not, I would say, one of the great glories of the 19th century. He said the natural numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, were invented by God. Everything else is the work of man. I think that's a pretty good summary. He gave us just enough to go on, but no more than was needed. After all, he could have given us all of mathematics and tablets, like Moses at Sinai.
Yeah.
But why didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, for one thing, he evidently figured that we needed something simple at Sinai that we could understand at once.
Yeah.
But mathematics, since it does not deal with the aggressive aspects of the human heart, can be a luxurious garden which we can enter over centuries.
But I think, isn't it, I'm not a mathematician, but it struck me as curious that the Greeks were interested in conic sections, right? And then, of course, eventually Kepler showed that it was an elliptical.
Yeah.
In other words, mathematics has often preceded its applications in the physical world. It strikes me that that does have, what you're saying, some sort of religious significance. It's mysterious and slightly spooky that that's the case.
Yeah, I'm not asking you for a religious confession either. How would you answer the same question that I posed to David?
I think that it does point to the idea, the Platonic idea, that mind and intelligence is a fundamental reality. If that's what you're saying. And if that's a religious statement, then that's a religious statement.
What does macroeconomics point to?
David, the idea of numbers predating human beings being there 15 billion years ago, is that just sort of an intuition you have? The nominalists are going to say, the numbers, they came about as we began to have a use for it.
Let's take a simple case. Here's a theorem, elementary mathematics. There exists a number between 2 and 3. I can prove it. Now, let's go back 5 billion years. Thought experiment. Is that true or false 5 billion years ago?
There's a tree falling on the forest.
5 billion years ago, we can certainly talk about it. We can project our minds backward. I'm asking whether that statement, there exists, it's an ontological commitment, a number between 2 and 4, was true or false 5 billion years ago. It's got to be one or the other.
My question would be, how would one, from the nominalist perspective, how would one know that the number 3 is not just a matter of convenience or something that we put on the number line between 2 and 4.
Yeah, cher ami, listen to me. I'm asking for a simple declaration, true or false, 5 billion years ago.
Well, let's say true,
let's say true.
Okay.
That means you're committed to the existence of the number 3 in the absence of any human mind, which seemed to me absolutely unassailable. But that means that the number 3 is not a device, product, inclination, procedure or product of the human mind. It has an independent existence. We've just said its existence has nothing to do with the human mind.
So my question, I guess, then was, how do we access the number 3? I mean, do we intuit it directly, or?
That's a good question, and nobody knows that either.
Okay.
Nobody knows that either. I mean, this is part of Alfred Wallace's compendium of questions, criticisms that he directed toward Darwin. We have knowledge of the numbers. We don't know how we have knowledge of the numbers. It is highly unsatisfactory to say that the number 3 is some Platonic entity beyond space and time, because then immediately, how does a Platonic entity beyond space and time barge into human existence and cause a commotion? Mm-hmm. No, that's an open question. Mm-hmm. Paul Benacerra first asked that when I was at Princeton. Good question. And what do we mean by saying that a number is beyond space, when beyond is itself a spatial measure? And if it's beyond time, when is it beyond time, which is a temporal measure? So the second you begin to interrogate these ideas, clearly you get a tremendous sea of confusion. You know, those fronds reaching up to pull you down. Mm. Nobody knows the answer to these questions. Philosophically, these are areas of the dead. We can answer.
But the nominalist thing can be knocked by the fact that the laws of physics are mathematical in form. So,
and presumably they work.
I mean, how can you if conic sections, were a human invention, then how come that the planetary forms are our ellipse, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. I don't see how that nominalist view works, actually. But I obviously agree entirely with what David's saying. He's pressing it much better as a mathematician than I am, but certainly I can't see how possibly when numbers could be a human.
There's no daylight between Mike and me on anything.
Basically, yeah. No. But I would say that the overall thrust of science, I mean, my gut feeling would be, I'm not particularly religious, I have to say, really, but my gut feeling would be that the universe is the expression in some sense of intelligence in some way, of mind. That's sort of Plato's idea, I suppose, That's my gut feeling. Okay. I mean, you know, it's sort of
in this more, struggling to give it a term, but this more teleological view or top-down view of the scientific endeavor, how might that filter down to the level of practice? I mean, this seems almost like we're talking theory, but the practitioner might go on his merry way, same as ever before, even two decades out after the supposed revolution in the level of theory.
To me, it's just extending science, you know, just biophysical letters, biophysical biology, Journal of Biophysics are now full of, you know, characterization of, you know, higher order structures, you know, bullet properties of things. Mm. And this is all in this mysterious mesoscopic, that's an incredible coincidence to me, that the realm of condensed physics is the same domain, scale of domain, as the cell. And as condensed physicists keep on saying, you know, the properties of materials in this mesoscopic realm are very, very unpredictable, surprising, and extraordinary. And that's exactly the same realm of the cell. And so, you know, when you're seeing this now coming out in journals of biophysics, I mean, you shouldn't need biophysics of living things to explain the form of living things if they're just machines, right? You should be able to do it all from below, from the combinations of things. Once you bring in physical law, and you have to bring in all sorts of higher biophysical laws, properties of bulk materials, properties of collectives, natural properties of collectives, and all this sort of stuff, you're moving cell biology back to laws of form. As I say, cell biologists have never accepted the reductionist thing. So basically, in fact, you know, this is the only beginning. It's a long way to go. But the definitions of you know, what it's going to turn out to be, this is my prediction, there will be a limited number of cells as there are a limited number of protein folds. Mm. And the limited number of cells will be determined by basically, in general, biophysics, but a lot of sort of special rules and regulations and organizational principles which apply to higher order structures in the cell. That's my suspicion. There will be a limited number of cells, and they're built into nature itself.
I just wanted to comment really quickly that seemed the idea that understanding for its own sake is fine and is great. Maybe even connects back to David's point where the butterfly, its chrysalis, the way it works, maybe ought to just amaze and intrigue the gentle, kind, inquisitive soul, and that should be enough. There should need to be no commercial payoff, no practical application.
Oh, yes, there will be. Yes, there will be. Because, okay. For instance, if you want to, there's another field developing physical biology called artificial cells, and the aim there is to build new types of cells. Mm-hmm. And to do that, to get stable functional cells, you're going to have to understand, you know, the properties of membranes at a higher level. You're going to have to obey these rules in putting together matter into these forms. Whether we can construct entirely new forms of cells, you know, Richard Owen said that in fact there are many other vertebrate possibilities on other planets. You know, the vertebrates will be on other planets, but other things will be as well. In other words, that the laws of form on Earth didn't reveal all the forms of biology, right? Mm. And so you could say that the existing cells in living systems don't exploit all possible cell forms, right? Mm-hmm. But to find other cell forms, you're going to have to work out the rules of cytoarchitecture and how to put it together using self-organizing systems, you know, microtubules, actin, and this sort of thing. Find out how many different forms you can put them into. I mean, actin, for instance, forms spirals, it'll form, you know, circles, it forms stars, it forms asters in a Petri dish, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got to work out all those possible forms. These various, you know, sort of microtubule and actin and myosin form, you got to work out all the rules of these systems before you can start building new cytoarchitectures. Mm-hmm. So that's really, I think this is coming.
As Berlinski stated, it is astonishing that the natural numbers should be discoverable by man. God, he says, gave us the natural numbers, though man supplied the rest of mathematics. Denton likewise noted that the pre-social nature of the numbers and of the laws of form suggest to him that mind is a fundamental aspect of reality. Because of this, Denton expects we'll find a limited number of possible cell architectures, and that we will discover a set of pre-existing rules that limit the range of shapes that even artificial cells may take. This is Joshua Youngkin for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org. or www.idthefuture.com.